is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Next on News for the Soul, your spiritual life with Raymond Posch.
Raymond is a life mastery coach, writer, speaker, and host of the Spirituality Beckoning podcast. His book, Awakening to Wholeness, is a record of his exploration into spirituality and his personal awakening. As an avid speaker, his mission is to share his knowledge and help others to awaken to oneness and to make a positive difference in the world. Let's welcome Raymond back to News for the Soul.
Welcome to my listening audience. This is another episode of Our Spiritual Life. And with me today, I have Daniel Merrifield. He is a spiritual teacher. Actually, he didn't use that term on his website, so we will let him tell us about what he does. But, I know that he's an author. He's a healer. He says that he is a mentor. And so I assume that's probably pretty much along the lines of working with clients as a coach, but we'll let him tell us about that. So welcome, Daniel. How are you today?
Good day. Thank you for having me. I'm well, thanks. When we talk about spirituality and we talk about kind of like the terminologies in which our titles, our kind of approach is never the same for anybody. So everybody equals and everybody heals in different ways. There's no equal formula that everybody has to have this one direction. This is the direction you got to heal. Mm-hmm. This is what it is, because we look to the balancing principles of nature to form that relationship, to form our identity within our embodiment. So titles to me are only really relevant when you kind of want to advertise yourself. But when we come to healing, it happens in many different forms, many different principles, and our life experience is always unique to the individual. So I like to think of it as it's an individual journey, and when we mentor people, it is simply that process of allowing them to understand who they are.
Let me interrupt here just for a quick moment. For the audience, you may have noticed Daniel has a bit of an accent, and it sounds like he lived for many. I know that he in his early days lived in England, but he's lived in Australia and now in New Zealand. So you may detect some accent there, but he's coming to us today from New Zealand. So, I've never been to New Zealand, but I would love to do that. That's a beautiful place.
Everywhere is uniquely beautiful. You just got to find that aspect of the place you call home. But I grew up in England, like you said, and then I moved to Melbourne, Australia. So I did the country life in England. I did the city life in Australia, and now I'm back to the country life in New Zealand.
Ah.
So I've kind of gone that full circle, but now I'm at the opposite side of the world.
Uh-huh. Yeah, very good. Let's explore then a bit about you and your role in spirituality and working with other people. You know, I know that you're an author of a book. We're going to get into that, but talk a little bit about your history. How did you come to be the spiritual person that you are today?
When I was growing up, I always knew I saw the world differently, and my relationships with nature and animals were always uniquely bound to my perspective. I found that people couldn't really see it from my point of view. So, and back in England, the mindset was a fear-based mindset. You know, people used to struggle through life with this like chains and ball around their ankles, not really being able to push their true happiness or the direction that they wanted to lead. So my parents put me into that umbrella theme of that reality. So I went from being free within my own mind to being locked up in the constraints of the world we call the economy today, to missing out on my kind of my teens and my 20s for this fear-based reality. And then I approached it back again in my late 20s. And I found that when I've approached it back in my late 20s, I have this teaching to it. So it's all in your mental health. Everything we do today is all strictly within your mind. So if what we eat, how we exercise, how we heal, our actual trajectory in life, the people we surround ourselves with, it all starts in your mental space. And I found just from my experience that it is easily removed by conditioning, ideologies, methodology, where people don't really know the direction that they're going, but they know that they have to take other people's power to feel happy. Mm. And that is never the natural way. So I kind of mold nature, our relationship with the planet, and then bring this caring, loving relationship back into the minds and let understand the true value of being at peace.
Who were your spiritual teachers?
I've never had one. It's all been in my mind, and I knew very early stages that I could see animals, I could see spirits, I could see and hear. I had all these gifts when I was younger, and it got removed out of my mindset by this conditioning of the modern day, what we call the modern day reality. And I completely ignored it, and it was draining the life out of me for this natural instinct that I had within my embodiment. Only until later on, nearly two decades later, I couldn't take it anymore, and the system broke me because it was just so unnatural to how we are. Everything that you see within the world disempowers people, and the true ability to be at peace, you have to bring that empowerment back into your embodiment. And then these natural gifts, they're not just natural to me, they're natural to everybody, but you have to be in the right space, the right environment, the right loving, caring qualities into your world. So when we talk about mental health, when we talk about a relationship with nature and our body and the concepts of life, we are driven by materialistic wealth. We are not driven. So we'll always put the economy before people's mental status. And because the economy requires people to be only allowed to achieve what they can within this lifetime, their mental status has to be compromised. So 99% of the population, their mental status is compromised to fill up materialistic wealth. So that's where we don't have mental realities where people can understand their minds, their health, their body, because it's all driven by an alternative motive, and that is greed, the economy, and the wealth, and wealth, you know?
Right, right. Well, I definitely agree with everything you're saying. I mean, I definitely relate to it. When you say you had no spiritual teachers, did any spiritual authors influence you in the way you approach
life? So my journey's been super unique because I get all my information from nature. So I get visions. I have I can see prophecies. I can see all different concepts all by being in nature. So this natural line of communication is drawn from the energy within the planet itself. So obviously some places are stronger than others, but the way I see is all from information that I've had the honor of receiving from a natural place, a natural energetical transfer within the planet. So I've read books, and none of them stand out to me. This is just something that comes from an internal light, which I have now embraced, and I want to offer it back out to the world, because there's many different ways of healing, and it's all down to the individual. And if this helps 100 people or however many people, it's done a job well done, you know?
Uh-huh. Very good. I saw something that you had mentioned about it was something about your family and ancestors, and I kind of wondered about that. You know, if you're talking about ancestors at a tribal, a deeper kind of level.
Absolutely. So there's three main conditions which kind of really influence our life when we're born. That's our DNA, the memory from our family DNA passed on within our embodiment. There's the imprint of the universe stamped onto our personality when we're born. And there was a soul's contract, so whatever previous lives that we lived, that they all influenced. Those are the really three main direct ones that kind of influences on our journey. But when we're born and we're understanding our embodiment, majority of the time we have to understand our parents before we understand our embodiment, because we've got to remove their energy out of our aura to be able to really find the identity. So sometimes when we're looking at past, and I grew up in a country and my family have always said, oh, you know, there's always been one family member that's been spiritual, especially in England. They kind of stamped a kind of an image on these spiritual people. No, they're evil, you know, they're black magic and all this lot. And that's the fear mindset in which how the, not the government at the time, but whoever was in control controlled the communities. You know, you have to have this villain kind of hero scenario where if they're the villain, I'm the hero, which is not life. That's just control. So when I always have guides around. Everybody has guides around me. So when we are born, we have this supportive system with the fourth dimension, which is our guides through life. And majority of the times, they are past family members. So as they have this relationship through life with us, they will probably stay with parts of the family until it's their time to be passed on. So these lines of communication with the fourth dimension and the third dimension are the most supportive energies that we can have within this lifetime, because they don't just support us mentally through our visions, they support us physically as well. And they can draw animals and nature. And so when we're looking to healing and we're looking to surround ourselves with people, we give off an aura, and that aura is always influenced by our guides, by the way that we perceive life, the way that we heal, the way that we actually interpretate conversations and energies and stuff like this. So the fourth dimension, family, past members, spirit guides, are always present with us. We just have to turn that kind of glaze to the fourth dimension to be able to receive that information.
All right. Well, you know, it sounds like you are very intuitive, that you have some psychic abilities, I would say. I don't know if you talk about those much, but I do know that you channeled your book, and that to me, that's usually what a psychic, you need to be a psychic who has some access to some deep knowledge to do that. So just holding off on your book just a little bit more. This I find this very interesting, because you come, you know, from such a different direction than I do. You know, I've always been more an intellectual type, very conceptual. I'm not really well in tune with my intuition or energy, for that matter. You know, and I've kind of approached it more from a different level, but what I'm really discovering lately is that so many good teachers talk a lot and do a lot with energy. And it sounds like you're that way as well. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So your life, one of the main teaching methods that I have is the transfer of energy. So when we talk about transfer of energy, that is everything that we do, the conversation that we're having now, what we eat, what we see, what we do. But we also have the harmonizing of our internal frequencies and our vibrational connection, so we can have certain elements around the planet, certain relationships with nature. And what we fail to identify is the basic understanding of the balancing core principles of the planet. And the balancing core principle events are always the exchange of energy, but grounding. So when we go into our mental space and we go into our reality, we only use 10% of our mind. And that 10% of the mind is strictly logic. Logic requires two platforms, control and to be able and the efficiency to control. So that when we look at energy and we look at our body and we look at the balancing principles of our life, that 10% has no ability to heal because it's control. And to understand your body, we have to release that control and align our actual, well, center our aura to the aligning principles of the nature. And that's one area of our life which people miss, because that over 90% of the brain, that within that 90% is freedom. So when we start aligning ourselves with not just spaces we put ourselves in, conversations, that our health and well-being, the way that we handle our body, what we eat, everything is a transfer of energy. So people will go to like a Reiki teacher and they'll go, oh, I just need to realign my body. But every time you eat foods, you're realigning your body. Every time you step outside and walk on grass, you're grounding and realigning your body. Mm-hmm. Every time you have a conversation that's enlightening, you're grounding, you're aligning your body. So the transfer of energy is the principles of life. So you can, like, I can go into a meditational state by just walking. So the meditational state is not, it's a point of separation. So it's not a particular place that you go off or you hold. It is how you understand your body. So the transfer of energy is our life. And I go a lot in transfer of energy and simple, like if you think of anxiety, stress, fear, envy, all these end products, and the lack of understanding the moment. So the lack of understanding of how the energies affected them within their mental space. So transfer of energy should be taught, and this is obviously my belief and what I've seen on my path, from a very young age, the transfer of energy should be given a child the freedom of knowledge to understand the world itself. Instead of having these ideologies and controls and conditioning and all these philosophies and how the world exists and this is the actual structure and the template and all that lot, we should allow this knowledge of freedom. Because everything that we do, the answers are already inside of us. We just have to unlock it and release it.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I certainly I find what you're saying fascinating. I agree with it. You know, in my podcast episodes over actually probably the last couple of years, I've talked a lot about how we are so ego-based, which is fear-based, and that we need to recognize when we're coming from a state of fear in any of its forms and shift to a more powerful state. And so certainly that can be totally described in terms of energy. I talk about, you know, shift to a state of love, you know, that usually you need some thoughts about love to help make that shift. But that's an energy state too, when you can do that and come from love instead of fear. How do you work with people then about dealing with fear and dealing with anxiety and all of that kind of emotion and way of being in the world?
So when we look at, I know you said egos before, everybody has an ego. It's a mind's understanding of how you want the world to see you. So if you're a positive person, you'll the world will see you as a positive person. If you're kind of like this, you have this mindset that you want to achieve material wealth, any kind of, no matter the standard, you'll get this really kind of, you'll strike fear and aggression and anxiety and stress into everybody that you cross paths with, because that's your direction. You're implementing your reality at the expense of someone else's mental health, and we're not taught the simple principles of relations. So when we look at healing, we always try and find the source. The source holds the power, and when the creation of one source affected you directly, the source could be thousands of years old, but when the moment it affected you has the power to clear that reality within your mind. So when you look out to the world at the moment and we have someone tells you a story, it's probably 10% truth, a large percent of what happens in their reality and a small percentage of lies. So when we're identifying areas that cause them stress and envy and fear and stuff like this, we have to turn our glaze inwards and start recognizing addictions and triggers. And addictions and triggers, what they do is they add to that energy. So if you think of all those kind of end products, I call them fear, stress, anxiety, they're like I said, they're just a mind's understanding of not recognizing energy or when it affected them. So they will cause triggers and they'll cause addictions. So when we bring our glaze to our routines, our actual transfer of energy and our actual principles, we'll realize that we might be triggered, and in the same breath we might go into an addictive state, foods, you know, aggression, all these things that are forced upon us. So I always get people to concentrate within the moment. Within the moment is living. When you don't live in the moment, you live in the past is fear, we live in the future is anxiety. So you have to bring your glaze to the moment and recognize energy present. So for example, we could be having a conversation and I could say a single word and it could trigger. And when I say, when we're talking about triggering, it's always attached to a chain. So one trigger attaches to another chain, attaches to another chain, attaches to another chain. And it just builds on and builds on. And you could have hundreds of thousands of triggers all on this one chain that go back to a source. So we have to clear the triggers and understand the moment as we go along. So if I say a word and it triggers someone, that word to that person could mean fear, but that word to someone else could mean blessings. It's all down to the individual. So as we bring our glaze and our attention to our surroundings, we have to understand in the moment, and then we work our way back. So then you go, oh, okay, I was triggered now, this triggered me. I'll then go back 2 days, oh, I was triggered then. And then I'll go back a week, oh, I was triggered then. And I see this pattern. I see this routinely pattern that's affecting me, and I keep putting myself in these positions, or I keep surrounding myself with a personality that is triggering me, and I'm calling for this attention, or I potentially might be listening to something, an alternative influence in the background, and then going home and being angry. So we always have to be in the moment, register the trigger, register the addictive states, and then attach them to fear, anxiety, stress, and all these ones, because that's just the end product. We have to understand why we're getting to the end product first. And then once we've kind of worked out what's in our surroundings within the moment and the weeks, we can then start jumping back months and years and attaching those triggers to these realities and stuff like that. It's a healing process. It takes time, and that's life. You got to honor yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Use some different language when you're talking about this than what I've heard from many, many other people. So I find this fascinating, but I can definitely relate to everything you're saying. And I think that's right on. When did you first know that you were intuitive or empathic or whatever word that you use? But, you know, in tune with nature at a deep level, or reality at a deep level?
I used to sit by my bed and watch spirits walk around my room. So that was one of the first indications. And then within nature, I always used to make friends with animals. You know, I always had a very tight, close relationship with that energetic connection. But probably the main one is that when I look back now, the main kind of the actual if I was going to say, when I look back and I actually recognize the one that I should detect at time, is that I don't see words. I see the energies behind the words. So if someone could say a word, I don't see that. I see the story behind that word. So that word could have a big story. So I've struggled with words my whole life. I've just not had this connection to this concept. There's a actual whole new barrier, a whole communication language, and we just had this barrier in between these two principles, these two kind of teachings. And I've always seen the other side of the barrier. I've always seen the energetical transfer. I've always seen the story within the energy. So so one of my ways of healing is someone could be telling me a story, and I only need one word to see their story. They open up and they can let me in with that one word. So I'm seeing the energy to the words, not actually the words themselves. So I've struggled with words my whole life. And I see that as a gift now. I've been given this opportunity to, and that's why I say you always look to the source. When we're healing, we always look to the source of the energy. And by understanding energy in your life means that you can understand that when you're having a conversation that you're not kind of absorbing lies and realities and this kind of concept of their worlds, but you can we look to the source of energy. So that was my first kind of instincts. I remember back when I was younger and learning to read, and it was the most, it was just this massive resistance, the most unnatural. I felt like I wanted to be sick every single time that I was looking at it. I just had no real relationship with words themselves. But then when I was outside of this relationship with words, I just felt at home, like being at nature, being with animals. This is almost like this world, which I was trying to express what was there, was just closed down and away from me. And this is where I've closed myself down. The system kind of like broke my kind of foresight. And that's why I've come back to it. And this is my trajectory now, just helping people guide and get in touch with their mental health and that 90% of the brain they don't use, and understanding the energies of the planet. So yeah, I'd say that would be the first, when I look back, that would have been the key moment.
Yeah. So, and so that was, those difficulties you were just describing were especially your younger years in going to school, or did that last with you for most of your childhood?
It was definitely the first 10 years of my life. And then it's just like this ingrained reality. This is the world. This is how it should be. This is what we do. This is the life it is. And then I kind of got pushed into this direction, which I totally forgot about. And then I just lost touch with this connection, even though it was still there and it was still present and stuff like that. I actively pushed it aside because that's not, you get told that's not the world we live in. And this is me going circle, but all the way back around again, going, no, this is the world we live in. We're just pushed aside by greed and fear and all these things. So, and when we talk about energy, there's actually a shift on the planet that's coming at the moment. And timing is everything in life. And this energetical shift that's coming through the planet, the frequencies are changing, our bodies are changing. And if we carry on eating all these chemicals, all these kind of like these foods which are processed and stuff like that, our body won't adapt as quickly. This is actually a foresight that I've had, so it's probably a good example. So this is a unique time in the planet. Mm-hmm. The next two decades are essentially critical for us to be here in this moment. Is like it is such good luck for us to experience this life. As we evolve over the next two decades, the transfer of energy means that we always were able to have this innate ability to adapt with the seasons. Well, that's gone now. It all depends on the relationship of your mental health and your embodiment, your mind, body, and soul. So if you don't look after yourself within your mental space, eat healthy, exercise, have this gentle routine, and bring this harmony, this love, this empathy, and this kind of balancing relationships within nature, we won't be able to just, with this innate ability, won't be able to just naturally. We have to really ground ourselves to the planet. And if you go in a direction where you're binge eating and you've got all these addictions and triggers and stuff like that, you'll find that those symptoms will start showing up in your body. This transfer of energy is changing, and it's changing quickly. And this frequency, which is all the way around the universe until it resets, will keep getting stronger and stronger. And you have to look towards your mental space to be able to realize, to feel those energies. Feeling is a big part of life, to feel those energies of change and change with them, you know?
Yes. I want to come back to your, you said that you saw the energies behind the words. Did you see that in the people's auras, or how did you sense that energy?
Well, so the energies behind the words, it's a story in my head, and this is what people really struggle with. They when you have a vision or a foresight, you're seeing either a short interpretation of that story, or you hear words, or you see like a clip, whatever it may be. And sometimes it's just literally a feeling, and then I attach onto that feeling, and I let myself feel and understand those principles in which they're expressing to me, you know. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people struggle with the expression because they're locked down within their mindset. They haven't had any freedom at all, so the choice to be able to make decisions for themselves is completely removed. So when we kind of look at these kind of healing principles, they will say words which is attached to their story, and that story within my mind, I'm able to decipher and read their story behind that, you know. And this is not just unique to me. This is actually unique to everyone. And when we go into this next direction, and this is what I'm saying with words, words won't be our direct line of communication. It will be something greater than that. It will be the energy, reading the energies. And this is part of our healing. So if we start to understand energies, we can start to read energies. And I normally just get this intuitive reaction inside my head and go, that's where they're coming from. That I can see that within their holding within their body, or I can see that kind of like the direction in which they're going. Because sometimes people can tell a story, and like I said, it's only 10%. And that 10%, if I can understand that 10%, that's true, I can start understanding the story in the way that they heal, you know. So, and if you think of a person who is wanting to move forward and heal and kind of give themselves the best opportunity in life to be at peace and stuff, they've got to start deciphering conversations. And if 90% of that is not alive, irrelevant to how they absorb the information, they will spend a lot of energy deciphering someone else's reality, and that is many steps back, because you just want to align yourself with this collective, this frequency, this vibrational centering of understanding the truth, the source of the energy. So and when we digest the actual principles of life, it is always the understanding of the energy of the source. So that's why I probably have this different perspective on how energies work, or different terminology, if you want to call it, because I'm saying what I see, I'm saying how I feel, I'm digesting this kind of information, and there's many ways to say explain something. But this is my kind of direction in which it resonates with me.
Yeah. When you say principles of love, you know, I think love is so important, you know, that we need to shift from fear to love, you know, and the ideal in the world would be for if everyone could do that and could do it all the time. Well, of course, you know, it's going to be a long time before we probably get to that state. But the more that we can do that, I think the better. But when you say principles of love, what are you getting at when you say that?
So rules and regulations are built with no boundaries. So when we actually create rules and regulations, regulations, it is, we have to look to the core principles of the universe. people have different kind of terminologies, but the phrase I got was the core principles, and this is the core principles of life. So this is how nature balances. This is how it rejuvenates. This is how it understands values, and anything that we, any rules that we create have to have principles. And within those principles comes harmony, comes love, comes a place of balancing. So within love and balancing, we have our masculine and feminine beauties within the world. And every person has masculine and feminine side of them, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you want to have like this kind of logical, physical aspect of them, even the lady, she'll have to use her masculine side to participate in that. So principles of love is the divine feminine. So the divine feminine is what will turn the world upside down to get out of this state that we're in at the moment, because it is accessing the qualities of nature. It is looking not as a selfish kind of attitude of I want love, this is my direction, I want to go. This is actually being in harmony with the planet and allowing those frequencies to enlighten them and understand the value of actually being able to the simple principles of love. So, and that is respect. So for example, we're having a conversation now, or say I was having a conversation with someone in the supermarket. I may never agree with their opinion or their actions, but I can still hold respect. I can still hold respect for the soul and their embodiment. So when you have this kind of higher level of honor and treating them as an individual and their identity, you start welcoming energies of the planet around you, and that surrounds you with love. It surrounds you with a community, a different quality of life. And that is a direction that is lost because there's no control in that. There's no benefit in that because it doesn't feel materialistic wealth. So we push that aside, and that energy alone is the energy that the planet needs to rebalance. So when I look to the planet balancing principles of the world, there's only one energy that can do that, and that is that divine feminine. And the divine feminine, so when we look into leaders now, it would be the defined feminine, which masculine, which men don't have. They can have masculine energy, they can have feminine energy, but they don't have the divine. Men have defined masculine. So when we look to realign in the principles of the planet, it is a lady that will have to, or several ladies that will have to come in and use that divine feminine to rebalance what has gone wrong. And that is just by reading the energies of what I feel within the world at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. I'm totally understanding what you're talking about. And you know, the divine feminine is so important in terms, you know, I would call that energy nurturing. And, you know, we've so much lost that in the way we interact with each other and with the world. We need to get that back. You're right. But okay. So I'm tuning in a bit to what you're getting to now. And yeah, we could spend a lot more time talking about this, and I'd love to do that. And I love hearing when people who talk about, you know, intuitives or empaths, people who naturally feel and read energies. I grew up on a farm, and I was very in tune with nature, but I never thought about it in terms of energies, or, you know, and I don't think I sensed it in terms of energies, but maybe I did more than I know. You know, it's just something I had not, you know, by the time I got into school, I got so heavily into, you know, intellectual things, you know, doing well in mathematics and all that. You kind of lock into a certain way of approaching the world, and you've approached the world from a very different perspective, and I respect that. Okay, let's talk a little bit about your book. I saw that it's called Seedling, The Journey to Inner Peace. And and you channeled the book. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. Yep. Took me six to 8 months. So it was 6 months solid, and then on and off for the next 3 months after that. So, and my typical lines of communication are quite random. So I could be walking a dog, or like I say, out in nature, and I'll get a message, and I was always writing down in my notepad, "Oh, remember this, remember that." So, and the channeling is actually easy. It doesn't really drain you much, but for me, the draining part was making sure I get the lines of communication right. So when you receive the message, it's never wrong. That is a divine source. That is the energy, and the energy that's transferring that message.
Well, let me stop just a moment here. So normally I know the term channeling to mean that you channel from a being somewhere in the universe. Now, did you channel from a being, or are you channeling knowledge or information from the universe?
So when we channel, it's always through the fourth dimension. So you can channel from the fifth, sixth, seventh, wherever you want to kind of direction, but it always has to be relayed down, and it's always kind of assisted through a guide or someone from, say, if you're a seedling or a starling, it's someone from the direct planet of where you're going. So the way that you people get the information, and they if they want to actually embody someone else, they can channel it and let them take over their body and do it that way. But the way that I channel is that I ask for the relevant information to, and this topic was mental health, and they supplied me with all the information. So every information that came through me, I had to translate that and put it into a book. So there's not just one kind of individual way of channeling. Like you can let someone take over your embodiment, but that's just using them as like a physical point of transferring that energy across. Whereas I channel through receiving. I receive messages, and then I have to. And for example, the best one is I receive a lot of pictures. I receive pictures, story pictures. I receive video clips. I receive kind of different imagery of situations. And I have to take that information. I have to digest it. And then I have to kind of put it into a word form. And this is the beauty of life. It's not as simple as this is what it is. Put that down. Beauty of life is when you're receiving information, it's a blessing, and you have to look at the wisdom behind that information. And that's the real value of life. Because when you stop looking at in one kind of small portion and actually expand your consciousness, you'll find that you've been receiving information your whole life, but you've been ignoring it. And it's simple concepts. So the book is received through many different outlets and many different ways, but this is the way that I was able to interpret it into words.
What does the name seedling refer to?
So this is one of the first images I have. So within this life, within, say, let's just talk about the Western world and within what they're allowed to achieve, there's a seedling, and it was in a picture frame, and that picture frame was a desert. Our life, our happiness is outside that frame. So we've been contained to only achieve this amount. Your mental health can't expand. So with the life of seedling, it grows strong when the roots are deep. And the roots are deep are your mental space. So your mental space, the seedling grows deep, sets the roots, and then grows tall. So our mental space, our mental health, sets the foundations for us to expand our consciousness and head in a direction outside of that framework. And that was one of the first images I got. So that's why I called the book Seedling. If a seedling grew with no roots, you would never be able to. It would never grow. It wouldn't be able to survive. So, and the there's wisdom. So if you take your light and put your roots deep in the dark, there's wisdom in the dark. We have to find that wisdom. That's our mental space.
Wow. Okay. Very good. Yeah. Interesting interesting story. And let's talk a little bit about, you know, what are some of the key, do you have anything that you can share with the listeners that are some key tips that about how to, you know, address, like if they're coming from the point of view of a lot of anxiety or a lot of stress, you know, what tips would you give them on how to deal with that?
So if we, when we look at our lives, the first thing I'd say would be look at your routine. And if you're collecting items, especially materialistic items, which have been sold to you that which are, hold no value, but you're attaching energy to them, means that you could be actively filling your day with emotionally charged realities. And as a population that runs on fear, we don't know how to feel. So we are emotionally charged. So any time we can be triggered, any time that we can be affected, we can, our state of mentality can flip on a coin. So when we look at anxiety and stress, it is the spaces that we're holding, and it's the energies that we attach to items. So, and this space could be a conversation or work or home life, but we're not clearing the spaces. So when we look at spaces, typically within our world, we put everything under the umbrella of work. We get up thinking about work. We go to work. Within that work day, we might do some shopping. We might do some exercising. We might go socialize after work. Then we get home and then might do the kids, but then we're thinking about work as well. So we've got critical steps of our life: work, exercise, health, routine, socializing, all these stuff under the umbrella of work. Well, we have to identify the spaces and we have to close the energies off. So when we go to work, we have to go, right, I'm going to work. I'm going to open this space. When I finish work, I'm finishing this space of work and I'm opening up work, a space of eating. So your diet or exercising or socializing. So you need to understand when you're releasing your energy of empowerment to the umbrella of work, because work is only going to benefit the economy, you know, and that is that fear-based reality. So when we welcome love into our life, we have to know the value of, say, for example, cooking food. What you cook is important. So what love you're putting into your food and how much time you spend eating your food and socializing with your family or friends at the same time is an essential part of balancing your life. So if you go and go, oh, we'll just get a takeaway, we'll just quickly eat it, and then we'll put it to the side, because I've got this ideology of being lazy and I've wasted all my energy at work, I've got no energy left to actually honor myself or have simple core principles of life, you end up just disempowering every aspect of your life after the umbrella of work. And so the divining of spaces, even your sleep is a critical part one, the way you exercise, the way you eat, all that lot, that's good. The transfer of energy within your food, that's another one. So when we have all these things about plant-based diets and they're like vegans or vegetarians and meat eaters, it doesn't matter. It is about the transfer of energy. So you have to know the actual transfer of energy from one life into yours. So if you've got an animal that's locked up in a cage and they haven't socialized, they haven't had the correct diet, they haven't had the foods, their life is transferred into your embodiment. Whereas if an animal that's free within nature and you have a place of honoring the understanding the core principles of life, their freedom, their ability to be healthy, all that lot is transferred across onto your embodiment. That's how the planet works. It's all the transfer of energy, consistently transferring. It's the circle of life all the way around. So when we look into our lives, even vegetables, they have a consciousness. They're part of the system. So when you're growing vegetables, you don't want to put chemicals or pesticides or all these performance-based things. You just want to have the balancing principle of the universe transfer into your diet, into your body, and then go again. And this is where we cloud our daily routines. I know I've dived into food there, but we learn to understand spaces, learn to close spaces. If you're not at work, don't think about it. If you and I know it's an easy thing to say, but as soon as you open another space, you can then say to your mind, hang on, this is a space of exercise. I'm not going to think about anything but this. I'm going to have a routine. When I finish work and I swipe my card out, or I close my car door, or I put my pen down, or if you're in the trades, pack your tools up, whatever it may be, that's one space closed. I'm making that action and I'm moving into another space. That would be one. And the other one would be feelings and emotions. So feelings and emotions is feelings are our gifts. So we use our feelings for addictive states. So for example, if you're emotionally charged and you see a television screen and you go, oh, I really want to buy that item, you're using your eyes as to see that to create an addictive state. Or you might hear something and close a conversation down, or you might smell something and go, oh, I'm going to binge eat that. All these are the states from your gifts. So when we look at taking back our empowerment, we look at the five gifts: our hearing, seeing, feeling, smelling, hearing, seeing, smelling, feeling, whatever the one is, I've got lost track. So what we have to start moving the emotional concept out of them and actually embracing them for what they are. So when you engage in these feelings, you're not using them to fill a motive or an addictive state. You're using them to understand the true value within your embodiment. So if you see something and you're triggered, you take away that triggering from that addictive state and you start using them for your thingy. So for example, there's nothing better than your eyes being able to look out into nature and just absorb that energy. That is a feeling. Or hear the birds, or hear animals, or hear the conversation. Being present to the conversation matters. Smelling the food, tasting your food. It is all, instead of just filling it with salt and all these other things to supplement the kind of the quantity of the food, you're redirecting the qualities on what you have within your embodiment to a place of love, self-care, harmony, awareness. All these simple principles that we ignore.
Okay. Yes. So pay attention to those things. Yes. You're giving people something really good to talk about, and it's something everyone probably needs to learn more about, you know, or to think more about, and really, but I completely understand what you're saying, and I see the value. And I hope the listeners see that value as well. So pay attention to the spaces in our lives and how we use those spaces. Think in terms of the transfer of energy that's happening. Pay attention to your feelings. Understand what the vibes in those feelings are telling us. You know, is it good food, bad food? Is this a good environment or bad environment? All of that is something that we really should learn to pay much more attention to. I know that so many people are caught up in the routine of life and just the way we've grown up and the way life is, we've lost touch with that kind of knowledge, that kind of attention that you're talking about. So I think that's very beneficial. Thank you so much for that. We are really just out of time here, but any closing thoughts you'd like to tell the listeners, and be sure to tell them about your website or how they can learn more about you.
Thank you. The only thing I would say is that healing takes time, but it's an enjoyable journey. A lot of people think with healing that it's an emotional and you can go up and down through waves of being, you know, all these, until you can control your energy or your emotional energy, I should say, it can be very draining. But enjoy the moment. Be present. Honor yourself. Bring that self-awareness and love into your life. And really understand simple concepts that we've removed out of our life, you know. And then it all comes down to surround yourself with community. Many, many great spiritual teachers all the way around the world. So just find one that's local to you. Really delve into your healing. Always comes at the deepest level, understanding your mindset, and bring that value back in that's been lost or hidden from you. From my personal website, so sagesjourney.com, and I'm also on Instagram with A Sage's Journey as well. And there's also my book, which is available on Amazon as well, which is Seedling the Journey to Inner Peace.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I found this very interesting, very enlightening. It's always great to hear different perspectives, and you've brought a lot to the table. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for sharing this space with me.
All right. Well, to you and to my listeners, have a great day and a great life.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.